And Bobby lines it into center field for a base hit. And he's digging for second in there with a two-run double.
The Royals just stay hot. Bobby Witt Jr. two-run double gave them a 6-2 lead. They went on to win 8-3 over the Tigers on Wednesday afternoon. And they are on a roll, 32-19 through 51 games. Welcome into the Sports Ticket here on Kitty Country 94. We'll have more on the Royals here momentarily. Also coming up here on the Sports Ticket, we will look at local sports. We have an athlete of the week, state softball and tracks to tell you about. Also, the NBA and NHL playoffs and the Big 12 baseball tournament continues on. K-State had a come-from-behind game yesterday to keep their season alive. We'll update you on how the scores went on Wednesday, and look ahead to today's Big 12 baseball tournament action there at Globe Life Park in Arlington, Texas, home of the Texas Rangers. So, again, we are on the sports ticket here on Kitty Country 94. We will come back to the Royals, but real quick, want to go through the local sports here first and talk to you about our athletes of the week. The members of the Lakeside Knights Sand Greens golf team have been named the IncastSports.com Cutting Edge Fiber Athletes of the Week. Lakeside claimed their fourth straight Cache State Sand Greens golf title Monday in Tipton. The Knights won the title by 33 strokes over St. John's, finishing with 311 to the Blue Jays 344. That 33-stroke victory for Lakeside tied the second smallest winning margin during their four-year title run, but with last year's 25-stroke win being the only one closer. Individually, Lakeside junior Jace Cunningham claimed his second straight state title, shooting a 4-under par 66 for the day. He came in 8 strokes ahead of second-place finishers Ethan Worth of Rock Hills and Harvey Listener of Riley County at 74. Also for Lakeside, Gabe Smith took 6th at 77. Tatum Miller finished 9th, shooting an 83 for the day. Rounding out placings for Lakeside, Ian Christine took 10th with 85. And Jackson Hardy finished 14th, shooting an 88 on the day. So those are the notes for the athletes of the week, the Lakeside golf team. You can read more at ncksports.com. There's one thing I want to touch upon, and I've not been manning the show here for the first part of this week, but one of the things that and he won't like me bringing this up, but I'm just going to say it anyway, right? One of the things that I've always admired about this Lakeside golf team is the way that their coach, Corey Booker, just like keeps the focus on them, right? You know, Corey retired a couple years ago, and he came back to coach the team, and I know that he'll tell me and he'll tell you that it's pretty – he will likely say it's not real high maintenance because he's got a lot of kids that love the sport and love to golf, and he's very accurate on that. He's got kids that want to go out there and that put in the time. There's no question about that, going out and doing that. But one of the things that always strikes me about Lakeside golf is that, and you know, we've had these conversations, Corey and I, off the air, but I'm not gonna bring that the details of it into it. But in grass greens, 6 kids can go golf. You still only count a 4-team or a 4-person team score. For some reason, in sand greens, even if you have the 95 to qualify you for state, you can only take 5 golfers for the team. Which, if it's still a 4-team score, it's not affecting any of the scores. It might make the day just a hair longer if you have. But I feel like if you put the 95 up throughout the season, that whether you're the 6th golfer or not, you should be able to go golf, right? Like, if you can take 6 to grass green events, why can't you do 6 at sand green events? But the one thing that I always notice, and if you go look at the state championship team pictures, when you look at Lakeside, and that 6th person will be in that team picture with the state championship with a medal around his or her neck. That medal goes to the coach when you can only have 5 people participating. And so I think it does speak volumes. I think that he backs up what he talks about, right, about wishing that the 6th person could be there golfing, but they're not as far as actually competing that day. But the coach says, here's your medal because you earned this. And Corey never has a medal around his neck in those team pictures because he gives it off to the 6th golfer who earned that spot to golf at state but didn't get the opportunity to do so. So people can have their ideas and talk about how they feel about something or a rule here or there, but to actually follow through on it and actually believe in that and then say, hey, sixth golfer. Unfortunately, Eli Schmidt was the person this year. And if you look at that picture, Eli Schmidt's got a gold medal around his neck as a state champion with the team. And so you just look at those things, and Gabe Smith, I believe, was the one last year that had a gold medal around his neck with the team, but he couldn't golf that day because you can only take five. So it just strikes me every time I see that state championship picture, when that sixth golfer who's not able to golf that day because of rules that Kasia has still is in the team picture and still has a gold medal around their neck because the coach gave him or her his medal. And so I think you strive to have coaches that are that way. Again, Corey's not going to like me talking him up here on the show if he's listening. I can promise you that. But I think it deserves a little credit, and I think the Lakeside, the parents of the kids on the Lakeside golf team would agree with me, I would hope. And I just kind of wanted to point that out. They are Athletes of the Week from NCKSSports.com and Cunningham Fiber, the state champions, and you know all those kids have put in a lot of work. The cupboard's not bare either, because Ian Christine is the only senior on this team moving forward. So Corey will have, if he comes back, you know, if somebody else might step in and take the job. Again, Corey has retired once as the coach of the Lakeside golf team. But if he does come back, he's got quite a bit coming back with five competitors that were good enough to finish in the top 20 at the state sand greens meet. And in fact, four of those finished in the top 14. So, again, Lakeside, the cupboard not bare. You can read more about them, our Athletes of the Week, at nckssports.com. Okay, also coming up today, state softball, Southeast Saline opening play today at the 3A state tournament in Topeka. The Lady Trojans will play the final game at 5 o'clock this evening. They're the number 6 seed at 22-3, facing the number 3 seed Frontenac, which is 25-2. And again, that's the state softball tournament, which is taking place in Topeka today. The rest of that bracket in Class 3A, Holcomb plays Marysville. Holcomb's 25-0, the number one seed. That's 11 o'clock this morning. Marysville 16-11 in the 4-5 matchup. 22-2 Silver Lake against 19-2 Cheney at around 1. Around 3 o'clock this afternoon, it will be number 2 seed Osage City, 20-1 against 20-4 Wichita Trinity, the number 7 seed. And as we mentioned, Frontenac and Southeast Saline from the North Central Activities Association playing in the state softball tournament today. TMP made it from the Mid-Continent League in state softball in 2-1A, and this is taking place at Pratt Green Sports Complex as TMP's number 5 seed, 21-8 from the Mid-Continent League, taking on 4 seed Inman, who's 17-4 at 1 o'clock here today. State baseball also starts today. For those interested in that, we'll go to the 3A bracket, where Marysville again ended up winning their championship in the regional at 10-13. They took on number 1 seed 20-4 Wichita Trinity at 11 o'clock here this morning at the at KSU's Toynton Stadium there, Toynton Family Stadium at K-State. Burlington Frontenac is a 4-5 matchup. Then Heston takes on Topeka Hayden in the 2-7. 3 seed Sabetha against 6 seed Hoisington Central Plains. And then in 2-1A bracket, TMP also made it in baseball from the Mid-Continent League. They played 11 o'clock this morning against number 2 seed Marion. So let's look at what's going on there in Class 2-1A. You can find all those brackets, kasha.org, kshsaa.org, for all the state brackets for softball and baseball. State track and field coming up tomorrow. We'll have our first reports a little after 2 o'clock tomorrow for state track and field, as we'll have that going on. Reports again, 2 o'clock, Katy Country 94, katycountry94.com. We've got a lot of state track and field athletes. Later today, I'm going to post a story at nckssports.com that will have a link to the state track and field tournament information, which will have performance lists and all that info that you would want. Cessna Stadium is going to look a lot different this year, so you're going to want to probably pay attention to that and read up on that part of it and how things are going there. They have renovations going on there, and so there's an entire side that doesn't have the fixed bleachers. So it will be interesting to see everybody, how they funnel around and get seated and take part in that here at Cessna Stadium with the state track and field meet. But also have, I will also link our area athletes. I kind of do this every year. So it'll be a rundown of approximate times for each of the immediate area athletes here in the Katy Country 94 listing areas. So be looking for that later today. Hopefully this afternoon it'll be posted by then. And you have a chance to, see all that and know what everybody's doing tomorrow. We hope to be joined by a couple coaches as well on the sports ticket to preview state track and field. We've got a lot of area athletes that will be competing, and we'll be covering it again tomorrow. First report a little after 2 o'clock on KD Country 94, KDCountry94.com. You can always follow me on Twitter, or X as you call it now, at Dusty40 for state medalists that I'll be tweeting out there. So I'll be looking for that. And we are on the sports ticket brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit. They're south of the courthouse there, your home team for fast and friendly auto repair. Before we move on, I do want to pass along. We had our winners that had just come in after the Waterside Wake Up Show, but we can tell you the winners for the Solomon Valley Transportation Miles for Miles fundraiser. The Jewell County winner is Brianna Hansen from Mankato. She won a $200 chamber bucks from from Mankato Professional Pharmacy. As I was reading Mitchell County right underneath that again, $200 chamber bucks, Mankato Professional Pharmacy to Brianna Hansen from Mankato. Terry and Crystal Cunningham and Glenn Alder won the Mitchell County prize for today, as they won $100 membership to NCK Wellness Center in Beloit, and a $50 gift card from Giving Grace in Beloit, $50 gift card from Ace Hardware in Beloit, $50 gift card from Beloit Car Wash, $50 gift card from Salon 7 in Beloit, and $25 gift card from Bubba Q's in Beloit. And the winner for Osborne County is Marjorie Hinman. $50 Osborne cash sponsored by Farmway Credit Union in Osborne, and a $50 gift card from Hideout Coffee in Osborne. So those are your winners for Solomon Valley Transportation Miles for Miles fundraiser. All right, we move on here on the sports ticket from the local aspect to the Royals. As you heard at the beginning of the sports ticket, the Royals picked up an 8-3 win over the Tigers on Wednesday afternoon. Another outstanding game for Kansas City, and another game where they took an early lead and really never looked back. They were up 4-0, scored two in the second inning on RBI doubles from Freddie Fermin and Garrett Hampson. Nelson Velasquez had a homer in the top of the fourth inning, or the bottom of the fourth, excuse me, that made it 3-0. And then Vinny Pascatino, RBI single, made it 4-0 after five. The Tigers did get a two RBI double from Andy Ibanez in the seventh inning. But then you heard earlier Bobby Witt Jr., the two RBI double of his own to make it 6-2. Fermin had a two RBI single in the seventh to make it 8-2. The Tigers would add a run in the eighth inning, but that would wrap everything up there. The final score, again, 8-3 in favor of the Royals. Picking up a three-game sweep of the Tigers, a sixth consecutive win for Kansas City. Cole Reagans was outstanding on the mound. He did have three walks and got the pitch count up a little bit. He threw 100 pitches, allowed zero runs on just one hit in six innings, struck out a career-high 12, as Mac Quattro, the Royals manager, gave his thoughts on Cole Reagans, who's been kind of up and down at times this year after a lot of people thought he might be a dark horse Cy Young candidate.
Well, his stuff was great, you know, right out of the gate. You know, his changeup, we know how good it is. He was getting swing and miss on the fastball, too. Looked like, you know, they had to honor the changeup, and so he got him in between, ringing up a lot of strikeouts early, and command was pretty good. You know, a couple of those walks probably hurt his pitch count, the one long at-bat from Riley Green, but hard to argue with what he did.
Cole Reagans again picking up the win. He's now 4-3 as the Royals, as I mentioned, 32-19. We talked about this being their best start in team history through 50 games, and we'll continue to track that. And yeah, you know, I'm not going to do it for every game, but you know, you kind of go in 10 game increments and kind of see, hey, has this team been better at all during their history? And listen, at the beginning of the year, when I was talking about this Royals team, and they got off to a decent start, right? And you're thinking, oh well, they're winning some games here early, but you know, let's keep it. They started 1-3, and actually they started 2-4. So you're kind of at that point. You're like, well, I don't know about this team yet. And then they took on teams that they should beat, and they went on a 7-game winning streak and turned things around from 2-4 to 9-4. And then it's like, oh, well, let's start believing in this team. They've had a couple 3-game losing streaks in the middle of their season here, but again, they had a 7-game winning streak at one point earlier there, toward the early part of the season, beating teams they should beat. They get a 4-game sweep over Chicago. They got a 3-game sweep over the Astros, and now playing teams like Oakland and Detroit, who came into Kansas City, and what do you know? They get a 3-game sweep over Detroit and a 3-game sweep over the A's, and all of these series, by the way, have been homestands. that the Royals have just been dominant in and picked up a 7-game winning streak earlier this season during April. They have a 6-game winning streak that they've been able to tally up here during May. And again, they're 13 games above 500 right now at 32-19. You know, at the beginning of the year when they beat Chicago and they beat Baltimore, they had lost 2 out of 3 to Baltimore before coming back home to start that 7-game winning streak. When they had beaten Chicago and they'd beaten a Houston team that's just honestly not as good this year as they've been in the past. They're 22-28 right now, Houston is. But after they had done that, I was like, let's keep it all reserved a little bit. Let's not go too crazy with this team because it's still a young team trying to figure itself out. There will be some down spots. You know, I made a comment after they won 7 in a row. I remember this, that they likely will have a 7-game losing streak at some point during the season. They've not had that. Their longest losing streak of the year has been 3. And they've done that. You know, they've lost 4 out of 5. They lost 4 out of 6 to start the season. They had a stretch where they lost 4 out of 5 at one point here, but and have had 2 3-game losing streaks. But they've been able to avoid that gigantic long losing streak, and that's what good teams do. And like I said yesterday, it's, you know, I don't think the Royals have seen the meat of their schedule yet and played like the best teams that they'll see. You know, they start a series with Tampa Bay coming up, and the Rays are only 25-26. But after that, then they'll get into, you know, Minnesota, who is currently 3 games above 500 at 26-23, and then they'll have. They got the Padres coming up after that. San Diego is 26-26, so not a world beater or anything like that. And I'm looking at this, and it's like maybe their schedule is going to start getting tougher. Maybe they'll start seeing tougher teams. You know, Cleveland is coming up here to start June, the 4th through the 6th of June, and then they'll have Seattle and New York at home for a 7-game homestand, and then they'll play the Dodgers. You know, you would look at those games and think, hey, maybe this is where it starts to pick up. So, you know, Cleveland, if you look at their record right now, they're still first place in the AL Central at 33-17. And then you move on with the Mariners, whom the Royals have already played in Seattle. Seattle's 27-23. The Royals, when they went on the road to Seattle, ended up losing 2 of 3 in that series. So that's a team that caused some problems earlier this year. Then you have the Yankees, who are 34-17, a very, very good team. So it will pick up here once you get past the basically, once you start June, San Diego's, again, 500, and then you get Cleveland, Seattle, New York, and then the L.A. Dodgers would be next, and they're 33-19. So that's a stretch of a lot of really good teams the Royals are going to face when they start with the Indians there, starting on June 4th and all the way through June 16th with the Dodgers, 3 with Cleveland, 3 with Seattle, 4 with the Yankees at home, and then 3 at L.A. against the Dodgers, and then they'll go back to Oakland to play a few games as well. And so it will be a stretch here coming up here at the start of June where I think we're going to find out even a lot more about the Royals. They are so good right now. The pitching staff has been pretty well consistent. You know, they have some down spots every now and then, which is going to happen during a 162-game baseball season. You're not going to avoid having that at all during that time. So that's something that really stands out there. And then the bullpen has kind of figured things out as we go. They still have some shaky outings out of the bullpen as well, which is normal, unless you're just off the charts like Herrera Davis Holland or Herrera Madsen Davis back in 2015, when those two back into the bullpen, those 2 years were just unbelievable. The ERA was crazy, and Wade Davis was kind of the catalyst of that and had the best, I would say, stuff or whatever it might be to close games out and did so in 2015 and helped the Royals to the World Series title. So, again, you're looking at a team that continues to improve, it seems like, and they continue to stay hot. Again, their 6-game that they won in a row yesterday afternoon. And again, it's we talked about this earlier this week as well. You want to see the back part of that lineup start getting hot here and start doing some good things. Nelson Velasquez is not part of the back part of the lineup, but he did go 1-for-2, had the homer and RBI, scored 2 runs there yesterday. Freddie Fermin had 3 RBI, but then you look at Dyron Blanco went 0-for-4, Kyle Isbell went 0-for-4, Garrett Hampson went 1-for-2, Adam Frazier came in and went 0-for-1 in his spot there later as a pinch hitter, and then moving in at second base where Hampson was. So you're still on the backside of that. You know, you're Fermin's at 299 now, but you're looking at guys that are not hitting great at the back part of that lineup. So that does still bode itself to something that's a little concerning. Also a little concerning is Will Smith, right? They wanted him to be the closer earlier this year, and yesterday he pitched 2/3 of an inning, walked a guy, gave up 2 hits, and had 2 earned runs. His ERA is 7.63. I don't know if I need to tell you this, but a 7.63 ERA for a relief pitcher is not good. That's not a good ERA for anybody, but that means he's given up a lot of runs and not a lot of innings. So that is something that actually for me is a bit of a concern for sure. You know, I think we were excited about Will Smith. He's given up 53 earned runs let me look at the back. I'm looking at his first year in Kansas City. Let's go to this year in Kansas City. He has given up so far this year 13 runs, all earned, in 15 and a third innings. You're giving up almost a run every time you go out there. That's not good. This is the highest ERA that he has had. He was a starting pitcher his first year in Kansas City and then quickly became a reliever back in 2013. He's been a relief pitcher most of his career ever since then. Or actually, all of his career, really, ever since then. Milwaukee for 3 years, Giants for 3 years, Braves for 3 years, Astros, Rangers, and now Royals. This is by far his worst season. He was 2-7 last year, but had a 4.40 ERA, but did have 22 saves a year ago, which was his third highest in his career. This year, it's been a rough start for Will Smith. So that's kind of what I'm looking at there, is a guy that you really wanted to be a pretty big part of your bullpen and providing a lot for you, and that's just not been there. So that's one of the concerns that the Royals might have. You know, when you're 32-19, they're on a 6-game winning streak, you think everything's going right and you think you have everything figured out, but there are still some concerns at times. And like I said, that stretch in June is going to be very, very interesting to see how they come out of that with the teams that they're playing in June and the matchups they'll have. Again, the Guardians, Mariners, Yankees, and Dodgers in 4 back-to-back series is there coming up for the Royals. So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out for Kansas City. But again, they're looking good right now at 32-19, the standings right now. They're still a game and a half behind the Indians, who continue to win as well. They're on a 6-game winning streak also. They've won 9 of their last 10. Cleveland is 33-17, while the Royals, again, are 32-19. Minnesota Twins 26-23, so we have 3 teams with winning records in the AL Central. The Tigers are now 23-26 after getting swept. They were .500 coming into Kansas City in that 3-game series. And then you've got the White Sox, who are on the tail here, the worst team in the American League at 15-35. And in fact, they are the worst team in baseball at 15-35, are the White Sox in the AL Central. Leading the AL East is the Yankees at 34-17. The Mariners are leading the AL West 27-23, the only winning record in that division. And the NL, the Phillies are playing great baseball. They're 36-14, 6 games ahead of the Braves, who are 28-18. The Central 28-21, Milwaukee in first place, a game and a half ahead of the Cubs, who are 27-23. And the Dodgers have a 7-game lead in the NL West at 33-19. The Padres are an even .500 at 26-26. So that's an update of the baseball standings here today. Okay, we'll wrap up baseball here before we take a break. The Big 12 baseball tournament continuing on, as we'll look at everything here and pull up the bracket and tell you where everything's at the moment. This is still one of the most confusing brackets that I've ever seen, because they have the branch of the first games going into the it's like a basically like a feather bracket to start this thing out, and they have that branch going in to a totally different spot where it's not even where they end up. But let's tell you where everybody's at here after day 2. K-State was down 3-0 to West Virginia, but they bounced back and picked up an 8-4 win there yesterday, and they are they're underway at 9:00 this morning again against TCU. I'll see if I can pull that up and tell you a little bit more about what's going on with that one here early on. Man, the team's just... Sorry, I pulled up ESPN to look it up, and there's some news in the NBA right now that I'll probably talk about here at the end of the... Or once we talk about NBA playoffs as well. But man, let's get to this K-State TCU baseball game. This is game 9 of the Big 12 tournament, and for some reason I've been signed out here. I don't know why that happened, but we'll sign back in and see what happens. K-State TCU playing in the first game of today, game number 9 of the Big 12 tournament. I'm going to pull that down so the audio doesn't come through. TCU's up 4-0 with runners at first and third with one out in the top of the second inning. It looks like K-State's run of the Big 12 tournament actually could be over here today. That's going to be tough to come back from, 4-0 with TCU and an opportunity to score even more runs here. So that's where we're at in the Big 12 tournament with K-State. KU plays at 12:30. They'll be in the next game. They're a number 7 seed taking on top seed at Oklahoma. And then on the bottom side of the bracket at 4 o'clock this afternoon, 10 seed Texas Tech against 5 seed Cincinnati, who won over Texas 8-7. So Texas eliminated there from the Big 12 tournament, as was West Virginia yesterday, and also eliminated yesterday was Texas Tech wasn't eliminated. They're playing today. So this bracket is wild to try to read. Anyway, Oklahoma State beat Texas Tech 7-2, but Texas Tech had already picked up a win to open out, so they moved on to the back side of the bracket yet again. And that's where we sit again. KU and Oklahoma coming up at 12:30. TCU and K-State playing right now in the Big 12 tournament. And take a 30-second timeout. When we come back on the Sports Ticket brought to you by Kiever Brothers Automotive, we'll touch upon the NBA playoffs.
Does your vehicle have a leak, squeak, or rattle? Is there an annoying warning light shining at you from the dash? I'm Elijah at Kiever Brothers Automotive in Beloit. If you have an automotive issue, don't just live with it because you're afraid of what it might cost to get it fixed. We offer a 15-minute no-wrench inspection for free, so you can get a professional opinion about your problem without spending a dime. Call or stop by today. We're happy to take a look at almost anything for free. That's Kiever Brothers Automotive, just south the courthouse in Beloit, and online at KieferBrothers.com.
On this, Doncic got a hand on it. Irving controls. Game is over. And the Dallas Mavericks have come from behind to beat Minnesota in game 1 of the Western Conference Finals.
Should be a very interesting series there between the Mavericks and Timberwolves. It was a very interesting game 1, as you heard Kevin Harlan there on the call saying that the Mavericks came back from behind to win that game. Listen, it wasn't like it was a 20-point comeback or anything like that. It was really a back-and-forth game most of the night. The Timberwolves led 33-27 after the first. Dallas outscored them 33-29 in the second quarter to get within 1 by halftime. Or 3 by halftime, excuse me. Minnesota was up 62-59 at the break. And then in the third quarter, it was kind of back and forth. The Timberwolves actually trailed at one point, and then they retook the lead 83-82 going into the fourth quarter. Dallas had actually put on a pretty good run and taken a lead of, I think it was 89-89. No, let me look where this was at. It was actually in the night. Yeah, Dallas went up 97-89 with 7:38 remaining. And so they had a 8-point lead there, which that's why it's like weird to say that Dallas had a come from behind win, right? They did, but they led 97-89 with 7:14 left in the game, or with 7:38 left when Luka made a couple free throws. So they had an 8-point lead, and then the Timberwolves got hot. They started making some shots. Anthony Edwards made a 3 to cut it to 97-92. Luka Doncic had a free throw to make it 98-92. Karl Anthony Towns made a bucket to make it 98-94. They got a bucket from Rudy Gobert on an alley-oop to cut it to 2. Cat made a 3 at 4:39 left in the game to make it 99-98. And then another 3 from Anthony Edwards with 3:37 remaining gave Minnesota a 4-point lead of 102-98, but then Luka Doncic came big time and hit a step back 3 to get it back within 102-101, and then a 3 from PJ Washington gave Dallas a 104-102 lead, and then another bucket from Luka Doncic made it 106-102. So they went on a 8-0 run, took a 4-point lead. The Timberwolves got within 2, but you're kind of looking at the end of this game where Kyrie Irving hit a couple free throws to put Dallas up 108-104, and then Minnesota had the ball, and inexplicably, Mike Conley was fouled by Josh Green. It's like, dude, you're up 4. You don't even need to be around anybody. Like, the only way – that I'm watching the end of this game, and it's like, why just let him shoot a three? I just leave him open. It's not gonna hurt you with 1 second left, especially. Mike Conley got fouled by Josh Green shooting a three-pointer. His foot was very, very close to the line. They went to review and saw that his foot was actually behind the line, so it was a three-pointer. And so now you think strategy, right? Move into the mind of the coaches that are involved in these things, and no matter what, at the end of the game, there's 1.1 on the clock. You've been fouled on the three-pointer. You're down by four. Strategy says you got to make the first two free throws, and just 1 second left, you've got to miss the third one. And that was the strategy that they were going to go for, obviously, with a four-point deficit for the Timberwolves trying to get back into this thing. Mike Conley makes the first free throw, cuts the lead down to three at 108-105, but then he missed the second free throw. So that changes your strategy for sure. You've got to miss this thing deep now and get it quickly to a three-point shooter to tie the game. Conley obviously missed the third free throw on purpose, and it kind of went a little bit long, and it was gathered in by Kyrie Irving there in the end, and the clock ran out, and Dallas won by three, 108-105. But it's just like, I just don't understand why, like, these are professionals. And I get, whatever. It didn't hurt them in the end. I understand that, but there's no reason to be that close to a three-point shooter at the end of a game when you're up by four. Just back off them. Let them take the three. What? Who cares if they make the three? They make the three. At the point that he took it, with 1.1 on the clock, sure, you can test. You make sure that they're just not getting easy passes and shooting that. Because they got Kyrie Irving made his two free throws with 7 seconds left. So it's not like they have a lot of time to come down here and do a lot, right? They can maybe, if you make it easy for them, that shot might go up with 3 seconds left. And I get, make it hard for them, make it difficult. But, man, you just don't even be within 5 feet of the shooter if you can avoid it on a three-pointer at that point with 1 second left up by four. It's like, it's not going to hurt you. Let them shoot the three. Stay away. Don't try to block the shot. Just stay away from them. And again, it didn't hurt the Mavericks, but it just one of those things that kind of with strategy that I was talking about, obviously the strategy for the Timberwolves that I had talked about of, you know, make the first two, miss the last one on the three free throw attempts that you get. But strategy also means on defense, stay away from the shooter when you're up by four. There's no reason to foul in the final 10 seconds, 7 seconds of the game after the free throws by Kyrie Irving. So it's just some of those things are just aggravating to me when I'm watching sports. It's like just the common sense things that you just need to know about the game that are just normal. Obviously, they're situational, but they're still normal things that you should know fundamentally about the game. And it's just wild to me that it's wild to me that Jaylen Brown got a wide open look, not wide open, but got a chance to shoot a three with the Celtics down three late in game one of the Eastern Conference Finals against the Pacers. And so, it was a great shot that Jaylen Brown made, but we talked about that yesterday too. It's like, why are you letting the screens back you deep into the lane and let them set that play up for a three-pointer? You take the action and guard the guy that's trying to go to the three-point line and let him have the inside part of it and let him have a two-point basket. Give it to him for free. You're up by three. It's like these are two. It's the same kind of concept both nights. It's like, what are we doing here? Like, you're making things a little bit more difficult than they need to be here. And for the Pacers, they lost. It was a mistake that may haunt them for a while if they would get swept or losing five games to be like, man, we had a chance to take a 1-0 series lead and we let it slip through our hands. And so there's just those little things that I don't know if coaches aren't doing things the right way or if the players just are doing things going rogue and not listening to what coaches are trying to tell them, which I think that does happen in the NBA. I think there are some players that just don't respect the coaches and they're like, well, I'm getting paid to do what I'm doing. Well, yeah, he's getting paid to do what he's doing too. So, some of the best players would understand that this is what you got to do to win. And if you've watched The Last Dance, on Netflix with those Bulls teams in the 90s and what they were able to accomplish in that 1998 team in The Last Dance and winning another championship before they rode off, well, not everybody into the sunset, but before they went their separate ways. Like, you can tell the difference in a coach that knows the X's and O's and is respected by his players and understands, and his players understand that, hey, this guy actually knows what he's talking about. He's won a lot. And then you can see some of those where the respect just really isn't there. And it's like, let's go rogue. Listen, you cannot win championships without coaches that know what they're doing fundamentally. It doesn't happen. No, maybe Tyronn Lue would be the – no, I'm just kidding. I think Tyronn Lue's actually a good coach. But it's just – you. These things that are going on, it's like, pay attention to the coach. And I don't know if that's happening in some of these situations, or if it's just an accident. You know, maybe Josh Green just got caught up in a bad spot and fouled last night. But again, it didn't hurt Dallas. It did hurt the Pacers fundamentally of not to allowing them to get a 3-point opportunity, the Celtics late in the game. So again, that's where we're at with the NBA right now, and the Mavericks again picking up a 108-105 win. Game two will be in Minnesota on Friday. Game two of the Eastern Conference Finals is tonight in Boston at 7 o'clock. The Pacers and Celtics. Again, Boston has a 1-0 series lead after taking that first game in overtime, 133-128. Wasn't a lot of defense in that game. In fact, there's really not been a lot of defense in a lot of these Pacer games that they've had in the playoffs from one way or the other. So it'll be interesting to see how game two shakes out tonight. Indiana trying to steal one. Boston just looking to hold serve and keep where they're at here in the Eastern Conference. Again, they were leaps and bounds throughout the season. Their record was better than anybody in the league. And the way they've gone through the playoffs has proved that a little bit. And I know we talked about the other day that they really haven't seen the greatest teams in the playoffs yet. But you know what? That's fair. It's valid. But they also went 64-18 in the regular season. They were no doubt the best team during the regular season. And if you have the best record in the NBA, you played teams. You played very good teams at some point. And we're able to have a glossy record at 64-18 going into the postseason. So I still think the Celtics are going to win this thing. I said six. I gave an extra game, to be completely honest. I almost wanted to say five, but I'm gonna stick with six. I'll say that Boston wins two, Indiana wins two at home, and then Boston wins the next two, eliminating the Pacers in six on the Pacers' home floor in Indianapolis. We'll see how that shakes out, but again, that's where we're at with the NBA playoffs. Now, what we talk about with just this, just it's like it's a epidemic. There's another coach that's been fired after having a team that I get Donovan Mitchell's in Cleveland, but did people think Cleveland was like going to be the best team in the East this year and win a championship? Like, there's the first berth in the Eastern Conference semifinals in six seasons for the Cleveland Cavaliers, which, by the way, the only time Cleveland has ever done anything of significance in the NBA playoffs is when LeBron James was on their team. But they made the semifinals for the first time since LeBron James was on their team. And despite that, they have dismissed Coach J.B. Bickerstaff as their head coach. The 45-year-old ushered the Cavaliers through a rebuild. He won 99 regular season games in the past two seasons. 99 wins after LeBron James left the second time. And this team went back down into the doldrums for a little bit. And now he's done after two seasons, leading them to the semifinals of the Eastern Conference, somewhere they have not been since LeBron James was a coach there. 99 regular season wins. The franchise now embarks on a search that hopes it will land a coach to take Cleveland deeper into the Eastern Conference playoffs. You didn't give this guy a chance to get you deeper into the playoffs. You've not been this deep since LeBron James was there. We just, like, I'm just so... Listen, I think this compares maybe a little bit to Darvin Ham with the Lakers, to where, you know, J.B. Bickerstaff hasn't technically proven anything yet as a coach in this league. I get it. But if you don't give the guy a chance to prove something, how can he prove something? It doesn't make any sense. It's like when you're hiring and somebody says, oh, we want experience for this job. Well, how am I supposed to get experience if I can't how am I supposed to have experience if I can't get experience? If I can't get this job because I don't have experience, well, it's, what are we doing? It's like a never-ending cycle, right? And J.B. Bickerstaff takes this Cleveland Cavaliers team, which I don't think had, like, again, like the highest expectations ever. But he takes this team to a four seed, 48-34 this year. Beat the Magic in the first round. You know, went on to lose to the Celtics, which there's no shame in that. The Celtics were the best team in the NBA this year. This is why it's crazy to me. It's like this team went 48-34 and had some injuries in the semifinals of the Eastern Conference. Who knows if they'd have beat the Celtics if they'd have been 100% healthy. But it's still the Celtics who were 64-18 and had a much better – they were seven games better than any other team in the league. But you're going to fire the coach who went 48-34 and took you somewhere you haven't been in 6 years in general, and somewhere you haven't been without LeBron James for years upon years upon years. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me. It's like, and now they're saying, you know, Mike Greenberg of ESPN says he believes it's because he didn't get along with Donovan Mitchell. And that's another problem that we have, is that stars are pushing coaches out. Coaches that are having success are being pushed out by stars. You've seen this happen with LeBron James, let's be honest. So it's like, I get that you need to keep your superstar happy. But also, I think you need to understand that if you've not been somewhere for a while, maybe you should respect what that coach did to get you there. And it's just wild to me. 48-34, first semifinal appearance in the Eastern Conference in 6 years, and nah, see you later. Cleveland wants a fresh approach, and President of Basketball Operations Kobe Altman, General Manager Mike Gansey will embark on a coaching search. Cavaliers have the significant talent base that we mentioned with Mitchell, Darius Garland, and also Evan Mobley is part of this, and Jarrett Allen as well. They've got a good core group of young guys, and I get that, but man, we're not giving coaches chances to prove what they can do. What's the point? Like, I just, it's crazy to me. It is unbelievably crazy to me that maybe your basis is because Donovan Mitchell and J.B. Bickerstaff don't get along. Sure, coaches and players need to get along, but can we, like, fight through it anymore in anything and just be like, okay, well, you might not get along, but get along. You think Michael Jordan and Phil Jackson agreed upon everything? Absolutely not. Did they get along for the most part? It seemed like it. But I'm going to tell you right now, neither one of those guys won anything without each other. And so you need somebody to be there with you, whether that be a player that's going to help you out, like a Scottie Pippen, and then, you know, the Horace Grants of the world, the Dennis Rodmans, as you moved on with that dynasty. But it's just like, we just like give up because players and coaches don't get along, and then it's like, okay, see you later. And what do you have to show for it? Not a whole lot, to be completely honest with you. I don't know. It's frustrating that people just like give up, and a coach that does good things just gets tossed to the side because of what the player doesn't like him. Bickerstaff had a 170-159 record in five seasons with the Cavaliers, but again, this year was 48-34. It took a bit to get it going in the right direction, and he got it going in the right direction. And what he has to show for it is he's unemployed today. All right, that's enough NBA talk, right? Let's move on.
Under a minute and a half to go. Chuck played it ahead for Bennett. The net is empty. Sam Bennett makes it 3-0 Florida. And the Panthers are going to take game one of this Eastern Conference final.
A boring hockey game last night. 3-0. It was 1-0 through two. No, I didn't watch it all. I apologize for just calling it boring. I'm sure there's hockey fans out there that enjoyed it. But again, that was the 3-0 type game. You know, empty net. You get that final goal there and just completely put it away with no chance for the other team to come back. Those are the games that I just, if I was a hockey fan and watching, I probably still wouldn't enjoy those games. The thing that's exciting to me is the final goal in sudden death overtime. That's when hockey gets exciting. up until that point, maybe a goal that ties it to send it to overtime that might be late in the period, in the third period or something like that, would be exciting. But there's just a lot of lulls in hockey. There's a lot of lulls in soccer, too. But I would say that I would probably rather watch hockey than soccer as far as just sitting in front of the TV and doing it. Now, being at the spot, Sporting KC game was unbelievably fun to go to. I've never been to an NHL game. I think it probably would be fun to go to that. So I would actually love being there. But as far as watching it on TV, those 3-0 type things last night where the Rangers just – they're not scoring at all. And then – an open net and boom, it's 3-0 instead of 2-0 and everything's decided. And it's like, oh, okay. So the Panthers get a 3-0 win over the Rangers. And sorry if I'm not excited enough about the Panthers winning in hockey today, but it is what it is. The Panthers do have a 1-0 series lead. They'll pick that series back up on Friday night. So tonight in the NHL, we can tell you that the Western Conference Finals start. The Dallas Stars, it's 8. The Stars are in the Western Conference Finals. They're hosting the Oilers. Game 1 tonight, 7:30 on TNT. Edmonton and Dallas. I will say when I was in Dallas this weekend, you could tell that people were excited. It seemed like at the Frightmare Weekend convention that I was at, it seemed like more people were interested in the Stars than the Mavericks there. And of course the Stars were playing one of the nights I was there, and so people had it on their phones. They were watching it, the fans that were actually from Dallas that were at the thing, and I could hear them conversing back and forth talking about how the game was going. So they were excited about the Stars. But I'll tell you what, if you're a Dallas fan right now, got to be pretty fun having the Stars and Mavericks both in the conference finals in their respective sports. So Stars and Oilers tonight against 7:30 on TNT to start off the best of 7 Western Conference Finals. One other note that I do want to pass along here. If you're following Caitlin Clark's start to her career, Indiana Fever lose 85-83 to the Seattle Storm on Wednesday. They've been in close games and have had battles, but nonetheless, the Indiana Fever are 0-5 to start the season and to start Caitlin Clark's career. Clark says, you're never happy to lose. It's not fun, but at the same time, there's just a lot of things to build on. I'm just trying to be as positive as possible, continue to learn, continue to stack days. I know that first win will be right around the corner. They've had opportunities. They've been close. They've had the chance to get wins, but they have not, and it's going to take a little bit of time. Listen, everybody thought that Caitlin Clark was going to come in and turn the team around and start winning games right away. Didn't really know who the Indiana Fever were last year. But, you know, it is. It will take some time. Caitlin Clark had 21 points last night. She still struggles as far as from the floor. She had 21, 7 assists, 7 rebounds. Still not a bad night there for her, but she was 6 of 16 and 2 of 8 from three-point land. I'm tracking Aaliyah Boston. She had 4 points last night. 4 fouls. If Aaliyah Boston's in foul trouble and not playing, she is averaging 8.5 points a game for the Indiana Fever. Caitlin's going to need some help from Aaliyah Boston. Those are the two. I mean, how everybody was talking about that, like how cool it was that these two are the ones that are being picked. Caitlin Clark, through 5 games, is averaging just under 18 points, just under 6 assists, and just over 4.5 rebounds a game. Listen, that line is outstanding for the first 5 games of a career in any sport. In the NBA or WNBA. And so, yeah, it's Jewel Lloyd had 32 points and 11 rebounds for the Seattle Storm. Seattle is 2-3. It's here's the fun thing about everything that you see, too. So I'm scrolling through X last night, and they're talking about, you see these posts about all this, and I follow Tyler Lockett on X, and he's actually the reason I saw this, because he plays in Seattle, obviously, with the Seahawks. So Tyler's a great dude. He's going to support local people and support the area that he's in. I can promise you that. He did it in Manhattan when he was at K-State, and there's no doubt he's doing that in Seattle and uplifting the city, too. Seattle Storm tweeting out 18,343 in Climate Arena tonight. That's a Storm franchise record in capital letters. I love how all these teams, because the Connecticut Sun did this too. This is our first sellout since whatever of 2003. That was their first ever game. They had not had a sellout since then. And now Seattle Storm bragging about a franchise record. Y'all know why they're there. Let's not try to hide it. 18,343 weren't there to watch the Seattle Storm play. I'll promise you that. It's just funny to see all this. There's no mention of why the stadiums and arenas are going to be packed here this spring and summer. But everybody knows, but nobody's going to post that from the opposing team to pump up the other player. I get it. I understand why they're doing it like that. But it's just funny when you read it and it's like, oh, I wonder why there was a franchise record for attendance tonight. Maybe it's because the player that has transcended the game and brought the most popularity to your sport probably of all time might be a little bit of the reason. This Thursday, May 23rd, 10 o'clock here on The Sports Ticket. Big thanks to everybody for tuning in today. Go Royals. They're off today again. They'll pick it back up on Friday at St. Petersburg against the Rays. We hope that we can keep this winning streak going. Kansas City was six in a row. Have a great day, everybody.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.